In the days of 18 and 1, pagan all.
And playing today, and this is Rick Coven filling in as best he can for John Williams until 3 today, Pete Seeger, with a CD called American Industrial Bells, because as you just heard during the news, Labor Day is a day in which to celebrate the working man and also to celebrate Chicago's immense part in getting the 8-hour day and in the great labor struggles. I got a book on my desk not long ago titled Playing Catch with Strangers, A Family Guy Reluctantly Comes of Age. It was came my way through a mutual friend of the author and myself named Alvin Sikora, and it is my great pleasure to have the author on the phone from the East Coast. Bob Brody, how are you?
I'm great, Rick. Thank you.
And happy to be with you. Well, happy Labor Day. I was not, the book jacket has a quote from Dan Rather, the famous anchorman, saying, Bob Brody's Playing Catch with Strangers is a gem. I'm always suspicious of those kind of quotes, especially from big names like Dan Rather. But I've read the book, Bob, and it is beyond charming, beyond honest. You are a longtime PR executive, but you are a born writer. How do you take that?
I take it well, and in recent years when I'm asked to describe myself, and sometimes I even do this at presentations with clients, I tell people that even though I'm in public relations, I'm basically a writer masquerading as a PR person.
It's a good masquerade because that sometimes pays the bills and sometimes writing does not. It is what this is a memoir. Tell me if I'm describing it incorrectly, Bob. It is a memoir in a personal essay form. Is that okay with you?
Yes, that's a perfect description.
Have you been writing these essays your entire life?
I wrote most of the pieces that are in the book in the last 12 or 13 years or so. I had written a few essays here and there before, but just in recent years I came to feel that for all kinds of practical reasons, if I was to do any sort of writing, personal essays were a good form for me.
Mm-hmm.
They're short, and you can do a piece in a few hours, and if you're lucky enough to get published, you can get a quick hit, so you get that jolt of adrenaline that comes with it, and you can peg it to Father's Day or Mother's Day or Valentine's Day or Thanksgiving or Christmas for the sake of a newspaper audience or a magazine audience. So yeah, that's a fair description, but I mean, I think it just took me until I was
Of a certain age. Yeah, I feel the same way. We're roughly the same age, and I feel the certain way. You get involuntarily reflective about your life, do you not?
Exactly. I mean, I got to a point where I was old enough to realize that I had what qualified as a past.
Yes, and a relatively interesting life, yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and also I felt I had gotten to the point where I might even have something to say about it might even have figured out how to say what I had to say. So,
well, and you've also, I'm getting publishers, nothing like the byline jolt of getting a piece published in the New York Times as you have had. The notion of collecting them all into book form, what was the catalyst for that? You just had so many that you thought, well, maybe I'll make a book of this. Was that it?
Well, you know, it was something like that. I never intended to write a book. I never intended to write a memoir. I just got to the point where I realized I had enough. So I actually realized that I had in effect written a memoir without intending to.
If I
cobbled these pieces together, it might amount to something like a book.
Well, it does amount to something much more than a book. It's a very honest look, too, especially about the way you grew up with two deaf parents and about your... There's one of the great essays in here is about the almost misbegotten first date with your wife. I'm going to ask you, Bob, while we take a commercial break, and I'm on with Bob Brody, the author of Playing Catch with Strangers, A Family Guy Reluctantly Comes of Age. It's got amazing quiz. Also got a very nice, what they call endorsement from one of my favorite authors, Nicholas Pileggi, the author of Goodfellas and a classic writer and the widower of the great Nora Ephron. I would love, after we talk for a bit, if you might, because you do perform occasionally, there's some clips of you on YouTube, if you would read, and it's a very difficult for me to pick out, if you would read, and would you mind reading The Bridge when we come back and talk after we talk for a while?
I'd be happy to.
Wonderful, because I'd love people to hear you read. I think that's a very effective thing. And we'll talk more about your first brush with newspapers and your horrifying first, you moved to New York and something really bad happened to you that would force a lot of people to flee New York. Bob Brody, my new buddy, is the author of a gathering of essays which, to my mind, form a compelling, compelling, funny, touching, and always interesting biography. Before we talk, Bob, about your first misadventure in Manhattan, if you would read, and you perform at various places, too, doing live readings, if you wouldn't mind treating the listeners to one of the shorter, and they're all pretty short, this one really captures, I think, sort of the youthful enthusiasm that people outside of New York feel when they go to New York. It's called The Bridge. Would you mind reading it?
I'd be happy to.
Go ahead.
For years, all through my boyhood, my father drove our family over the George Washington Bridge. Almost always, we were going from our house in Fairlawn to visit my maternal grandparents, the Shefts, at 79th Street and 2nd Avenue, and always we took the George Washington Bridge. It would be just the four of us, my sister and I in the back seat, headed in for Passover or Thanksgiving or just a Sunday dinner. The bridge was tall and long and wide, all steel and cable suspended over the Hudson River, and as we crossed, I always looked to the right, toward the south, because there, spread out along the horizon, lay the towers of Manhattan. We lived in a town of maybe 35,000 in Bergen County, where almost everyone had a house and was white and had some money. And on weekend mornings, you heard all the lawnmowers going. So the George Washington Bridge came to mean something special. It connected us to a different universe, another dimension. For here in Manhattan, as I learned as a young boy, was everything I saw in the movies and read about in books. Here, I knew, were the Wall Street tycoons and the ladies who lunched the Broadway theaters and all those yellow cabs streaming through the night. That bridge with its structure so muscular, those cables like tendons in the arms, linked my past and present to what would become my future. I had no idea back then, at the age of 6 or 10 or 14, that Manhattan would remain my destination. Then again, maybe I suspected it. Certainly, I always felt a gravitational pull toward that skyline. Certainly, so much that I came to love was there. Little did I realize back then that I would, at the age of 23, move there and work there and meet Elvira there. And it was the George Washington Bridge that transported me to the rest of my life, that conveyed me all those years in the 1950s and 1960s from my old home to my new one.
And that's really lovely writing. It really, Bob, gives a sense of longing and aspiration and also that sense of wonder that I know kids feel driving into the city of Chicago from either the north or the south. That's just a lovely, lovely piece of writing. Elvira is the woman who you dated. What was the guy who fixed you up? Carmine, was that his name?
That's right.
Yeah, Carmine, that's a great thing. But I want to read the next section. You do eventually move to Manhattan. You're there 5 weeks, and this happens. A stranger in a woolen cap is racing down the hall toward me with a raised hunting knife that seems to grow longer and sharper by the second. I'm carrying two supermarket bags stuffed with groceries and a heavy Sunday newspaper, about to fish out my keys and open the door to my home. It is just before noon, July 5th, 1975, warm and sunny. Just 5 weeks earlier, I had left New Jersey to move into my first New York City apartment, a $150 a month studio on East 7th Avenue and Avenue A. Give me all your money, the stranger says. That's some introduction in New York. And about that same time, I was living at Bowery in Houston. So, East 7th and Avenue A was a tough neighborhood at the time, was it not?
It was funky.
Yeah, funky. That's the word I'm looking for. Funky, funky, funky. You made it in New York. You did have a brush, another one of these. I literally cannot tell you. In the second edition of this book, please ask me for a jacket quote, because I was beyond charmed by the book. You can turn to any one of the essays and pick up Bob Brody's life. The tabloid kid's an interesting one. It was your first and only, as you say, stint on the staff of a newspaper, but you seem almost born to be a newspaper man. You sent letters to some 70 papers around the country. What seeded that urge for you, Bob, to work for a newspaper?
Oh, well, I just always felt an urge to report on what I was saying. And so I was on my junior high school newspaper, and I was on my high school newspaper. And then I was I wrote for the college newspaper and was the editor there for a while. And so I think it just comes from wanting to share what I've observed. And I mean, I do trace it back to a certain extent to my parents being deaf. I have this theory that because my parents were deaf, I really placed a premium on communication. And so I had to make sure that my parents understood me and that I could understand them. And so I recognized that if you could get across to people, if you could somehow articulate something, you were doing something important. And I was captured by newspapers early on too. I remember when the astronauts went up, I bought all the newspapers and saved them for years. And that's when New York City had a lot of newspapers.
Yeah, in the same year, there was a time, and we both lived in that time, when newspapers were just an essential part of people's lives. And it was also a place to find, you know, in a place like the New York Daily News, you'd find, you know, Jimmy Breslin, for goodness sake. And some of the great writing in this country was done in newspapers. What has been, you write very frankly about all the members of your family, very tenderly, tenderly about, I would be so eager if I ever get out there, I'm going to put the arm on you to meet your wife, Elvira. You just are incredibly loving. What's been the reaction of people about whom you write?
Positive. I mean, I've had mostly good stuff to say to people, so nobody has any call to get annoyed at me. I mean, I've put in what I've put in, and of course I've left out what I decided to leave out.
Yes.
Nobody wants to hear everything, and nobody is looking to shame anybody, so... but it is, I mean, this is how I feel. And again, I think this is the result of getting older and maybe more comfortable in my skin, because I know years ago, I doubt I would have written in a way that might be considered generous or charitable or understanding. I think it sometimes takes a long time to get to that point, but,
and also to be honest with yourself about yourself, which is a, you know, in some cases, a lifelong struggle that many people do not win. Do you like, I love the clip I saw of you on YouTube. Do you like reading these in public? Because that's part of the book marketing process these days, is it not?
I have to say, I really do. And yeah. That was the first reading I'd ever done in my life.
Is that right?
My own, as far as I can recall.
Yeah.
But my publisher invited me to this event, and I read that piece about my first date with my future wife.
Yeah.
That would almost be my last date, and I enjoyed it a lot. I really did, and certainly I enjoyed getting a good reaction from the audience. And it's something that I would love to do more of, and I'm trying to figure out and kind of work up the nerve to do more.
Well, I think, you know, where you're out in New York, there are a number of there are all sorts of literary gatherings these days, and I hope you do get to do more. Do you ever get out to Chicago? You must have for business. Sometime.
You know, I was there about 3 years ago. That was the last time. Without even remotely meaning to sound patronizing, I absolutely love Chicago. I was in Chicago years ago a couple of times, too, and it's just, well, as somebody once said, it's my kind of town.
Well, you're in love with New York, though, and there's no question about it. It comes off every page, I think. Nicholas Pileggi said it best, and you got a lot of friends. You've written some very nice things about this book. Here, Nicholas Pileggi says about this book, and Nick is the author of Good Fun. I've met him a couple times, and he is a vintage classic New Yorker and a great writer. He says of Bob Brody's book, Playing Catch with Strangers, in this winning memoir, Bob Brody wears his heart on both sleeves along with a chip on both shoulders. He's every inch a die-hard New Yorker, equally tender and tough. Give the guy credit. He gets stabbed 5 weeks after moving into the city, but sticks around for the next 41 years. That is one of the great jacket quotes I've ever seen in my life. Bob, it's a pleasure to meet you on the telephone, and if you ever get in this neck of the woods, please let me know.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you, and say hello to Alvin for us, and thank him, too, because, you know, this is one of those books I might never have seen if it was not, if he had not directed me to it, and I must tell you, it's one of my favorites, one of my favorite books I've read all year, and I read a lot. Bob, continued success, and keep writing.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.